Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. Each week we bring you the best news, views and interviews with the CEOs, leaders, clinicians who are changing the face of healthcare in the UK and beyond. As regular listeners know, I'm a health tech founder myself, founder of PocDoc. We're revolutionizing the blood testing space by allowing anyone with a smartphone to test themselves for major diseases. PocDoc is also a supporter of the show, so thank you very much to the team there. Also, thank you very much to everyone who's listening live on UK Health Radio. UK Health Radio is the world's leading talk health radio station. Also just launched on Spotify. So if you either miss me or miss anybody else, you can catch up through the UK Health Radio channel on Spotify. We have our own channel on Spotify, which you can go into. So if you miss this, and you can also watch this on YouTube. So thank you very much for all of the subscribers. All the numbers are going up, which is great. So thank you very much. We must be doing something right. So on to today's show. Today's show, we are talking about female health, specifically hormone health, and how hormone health or hormone levels and the management of hormone levels and the understanding of hormone levels can be combined with state-of-the-art data and advice around fitness, wellness and nutrition to help women lead happier, healthier lives. We've got two fantastic guests on today. So first of all, Dr. Michelle Tempest, who is a health tech advisor, investor and the founder of Candasic, and Dame Jessica Ennis Hill. I got the Dame in there as per our pre-show chat. Gold medal winning star of London 2012, who has founded Genis, which has combined hormone tracking, hormone management with fitness and nutrition to help women, like I said, get healthier and happier. Welcome to the show, both of you. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good.
Great to be here. Michelle?
Good. So I thought I'd start with Michelle. So when we have two guests on, we sort of have to manage how the, you know, conversation goes. But I thought we would just, you know, start with Michelle. So how could you give us the story about how you first kind of met Jessica and got involved in what became Genis, and, you know, what your original kind of impressions were at the time? Just, I think it's a super interesting origin story.
You know, look, it is a super interesting story, although we actually met on stage pretty much. We were at a conference and we were speaking about female health. And as a result, we then got talking and connecting. And after that, she's just the embodiment of the kind of founder that you want to invest in. And I guess just as a bit of a backtrack about myself. So I was originally an NHS doctor. So I was a psychiatrist by background. And then since around 2004, I've worked at a company called Candasic, and we work as a strategy consultancy and also do due diligence work for large transactions, private equity. And then in my hobby time, I love all things which are AI and technology, and obviously everything to do with female health. And as a result of that, I'm a Cambridge angel, and I do a bit of angel investing. And yeah, I think it's slightly atypical kind of way of actually finding a company that you really like. And it's very much driven by the individual who founded it. And also we were on a panel looking at female health and discussing the gap in the market, I would say, for everything which is female healthcare. Because to date, it has been under-researched, under-provided for, and under-invested. And I'm super passionate about changing that.
Yeah, we've had some amazing founders on the show who are working in the female health space, either sort of from a charity perspective or from, you know, a company perspective. And quite a few of them have sort of said it's kind of a shame that we have to talk about it as like female health as opposed to just health. But that's the situation that we're in, right? Like you have to, there's as you say, there's been so much underinvestment and lack of focus on it, you know, chronically. So yeah. And so what was the panel about? that you met on? What specifically? Was it general or was it specific?
No, it was very specific. And it was actually McDermott, who they're a sort of a legal firm that work in private equity. And I think that they had actually realized this kind of gap in the market for female healthcare. And that could be anything from sort of focusing on the acute end of care all the way through to kind of the research side. I mean, I guess I don't want to sort of sound bleak around the fact that it's been under-researched. I think it's all good, we're happy, it's exciting, it's a bright new future, right? It is exciting, but there's also a reason for why women haven't been part of research trials, because I think sometimes I have sort of noticed that people get quite emotional around the fact of, you know, well, why have women historically been left out? And it's actually a very simple and logical and clinical reason for the why we've been left out is because of, you know, that there was always a risk of an unborn child in terms of clinical trials. And so as a result, the majority of medications and the majority of everything physiological is very much based on the male physiology. Now, I actually see that as a real opportunity, because moving forwards, what we do know is that spending power actually relies on women, right? So when you're in a time of global economic concern, women drive spend. So 85% of consumer spend is female. And actually that makes up the purchasing. So women actually do 75% of purchasing power. So when you are looking at time of a consumerization in healthcare, and actually women wanting to start thinking, or indeed new products or new businesses entering this market, I actually see it as a real positive that female healthcare is becoming more consumerized, because hey, women have a lot of consumer power. And I'm not bleak about it at all, because I actually think as a result, we will be able to change the future for the better.
I would agree. Jessica, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's not only just the purchasing power that women have, it's also they take care of a majority of the healthcare kind of packages for their families and loved ones. You know, they're the women that are in the forefront of that. And when it comes to, you know, these key life stages that we pass through as women, whether that's, you know, pregnancy, postnatally, perimenopause, menopause, these are big life changes. There's so much going on from a female perspective, but we're still the women and the people who are taking charge of, you know, sourcing what kind of healthcare is given to the family and providing in that way. So we play a key role in so many different areas, juggling all these different things. It just makes complete sense that we're catered for in a more rounded way.
Yeah, I would agree. So what was your journey like from, you know, superstar athlete to, you know, founder of when you found something, it's like a nothing, right? There's nothing there. And then what was it, something that you sort of always wanted to do, or did it fall out of at some point in your athletic career? It sort of just came to, what was that sort of transition like?
Yeah, so if you would have said to me, you know, like 10 years ago, you'd be sat here, you know, talking about femtech and healthcare, and you'd have an app and you'd be a founder, I probably would have said, no way, absolutely not. I don't see that as my future. As an athlete, you're so focused and you're very much in the moment of what you're doing. So I almost didn't allow myself too much time to think about what was going to happen post my career. Right. And when I got to that stage of, I finished the Rio Olympics. I knew it was time to retire, and I'd kind of achieved in that phase of my life. The one thing I knew was that I wanted to take some of the learnings that I had taken from sport and go into an area that like just drove me in the same way, and that kind of made me feel passionate to kind of create a change. And it all really stemmed from my like understandings and learnings from sport, but also my journey through having my son during my career and all the changes that came with that, and coming back into, you know, a sporting world at the very top of my game again. And I learned so much about my body, my physiology as a woman. I learned about how much so many women don't actually know about their body, how little access there is. And like Michelle says, the absolute lack of research and money that's put into this area of female health. And that kind of drove me into creating Genis and to where I am now.
Well, we'll come on to how Genus works in a second, but I kind of want to still understand a little bit. It's a great opportunity to try and dig into it. When did you kind of start properly taking competing seriously? Like, how old were you, roughly, give or take? I mean, without wishing to pry, but like roughly, you know.
Yeah, I was about 9 or 10 years old when I started athletics, but I'd say it was around about the age of 13, 14 that I started taking it seriously. Yeah.
Okay. So during your time as a relatively serious to extremely serious athlete, like your body and yourself as a woman must have gone through an unbelievable amount of changes. Do you feel like at that time that the athletic training mindset and school of thought was like supportive to that? Like, was it changing? Was it getting better? Or like, what was your sort of experience of that kind of pathway?
My honest experience was just like absolute silence. I think there was no kind of, you know, from a young girl, like you say, you know, you're starting athletics at an age where you're coming into puberty, you're going through all those changes as a young girl, and then you're moving through your teenage years. And, you know, I went all the way through to pregnancy and postnatally. So I went through all the life stages.
Right.
And there was no support. Like you know, as a young girl, you're kind of told, well, you need to go onto the pill because that manages your menstrual cycle. And that's what everyone does. And you don't ask any questions because you don't fully understand. And there's no like real support to guide you with actually what happens when you have this influx of hormones and how does your period affect how you move and how you train. And, you know, what are the advantages and the disadvantages? There was very little conversation about that because there was such a lack of research. And, you know, as elite athletes, you put such emphasis on your nutrition and your psychology and all these key like points to create, you know, those small marginal gains. But actually understanding female athletes as a whole was something that was very much not understood throughout the majority of my career, I'd say.
And did that, like, was that because the people that ran the sport were predominantly male, or was it that they did that it was a black hole, they didn't understand, they didn't want to understand, there were other things to be thinking about? Like, it was easier to talk about marginal gains and stretching and ice baths and whatever else it was, as opposed to this kind of stuff which maybe felt a bit more complicated? Or what do you think it was?
I definitely think it was that. I think there was a lack of understanding because, wow, this is a complex area. Every female athlete is completely different. And there's also that feeling of, well, this is how we've done it for so many years. You know, look at psychology, for example. You know, years and years ago, it was physical, 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 and this is how we make our best athletes. And then all of a sudden, there was like, oh, but we all have these minds and a mindset. And actually, you know, 90%, I would say, of being a successful athlete is, you know, won and lost with your psychology and your mentality.
Right.
So I think there was definitely that shift. But I think from the female health perspective, I think definitely being a male dominated environment, most of the coaches within, definitely within track and field, are male. And there's just that lack of understanding and then that worry of, you know, having those awkward conversations with your athletes. How do you approach
especially when you're a teenager? Like, that's not going to be with that older grown up man. That's going to be really difficult. Awkward, I suspect.
Yeah. So most coaches would almost just avoid the conversation and not approach it. And I'd say only the past 2-3 years have we started to hear more elite athletes speaking openly about how they feel that they're menstrual cycle and their hormones have had an impact on their training and performances in competition.
And was there a tipping point? Was there a trigger for people speaking out more openly about it, or did it just sort of organically happen?
Yeah, I think it's probably been organic, but I think that I've definitely seen a trend in more female athletes starting their family before ending their career. So I think you become more aware of your body and your hormones and, you know, the changes you have to make. And I think that has hopefully driven that conversation about understanding hormones and periods and all those other things at a slightly earlier stage as well.
And what, in your, I guess, either directly lived experience or researched or however you want to sort of answer the question, what is the impact of changes in hormones on a woman's body, on a woman's body from a sort of athletic movement motivational perspective? I don't know how you want to answer the question, but you know, what do you understand, like, those changes, because I think you mentioned it, those impacts to be or possibly could be?
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time speaking to physiologists. We work with an amazing physiologist, Dr. Emma Ross, and she has worked within the world of sport for many years. And it's amazing to know. And, you know, I didn't really fully understand it till we kind of went down this road of creating Genis and creating the app, that actually your cycle, your menstrual cycle has these four phases. It's not just, you just think of it as your period. It's not actually just your period. You're going through these ebbs and flows through the month, and actually during those particular phases, if you're aware of them, for example your follicular phase, you're more likely to be able to build lean muscle. You can train and exercise in a better, more efficient way than you would have been able to in another phase of your menstrual cycle. And it's just small tweaks that you can make. So instead of just thinking, right, this is the month, I love running, I'm going to run hard every day. Actually, knowing when those phases are, I'm going to push hard, a little bit harder, and do more resistance work in my follicular phase. I'm going to ease off a little bit of my luteal phase, and I'm going to perhaps do more kind of steady state sessions. You're training in a much more efficient way, and you're in tune with your body and, you know, how those kind of hormonal fluctuations are happening to you as an individual.
And do you think that anyone during your time of competing, you know, from 13 or whenever 9 to 13 upwards, were people like women anecdotally aware that there was a possible impact, or it was like you guys you didn't realize yourselves at all?
No, I personally had no idea, and the only time I ever or had ever seen female athletes talking about their period or the menstrual cycle was always around the negative side effects. So it was always like, you've trained too hard, you've lost your period, this is a problem. And it would only be a conversation then. It was never a conversation of, well, actually, how can we look at it in a slightly different way from a more positive standpoint and look at the benefits, and, you know, how do we empower ourselves a little bit more with the way we exercise and move? It was all very much, okay, this is, something's wrong, let's now address it, now there's a problem.
Okay. And Michelle, just back to you. At what point did this kind of, because female health, as with health, pretty broad church, right? It's quite a lot in there. At what point did you start to think that there was a real issue around hormone management, understanding of hormone levels, hormone changes, impact on the body versus potentially other things that could also fit within the wider, you know, church, if you like, of female health?
I think it goes back to your point, actually, which is around health in general. So whether or not you're talking men or women, we're really only at the very beginning of sort of personalized data. So when you think of those sort of five P's, you know, the personalized, the predictive, the proactive, the participatory, and the preventative, we're only starting to monitor those things now. And I think Jessica's just sort of said, you know, on top of that, with women, you've kind of got all this other sort of blood fluctuating of hormones. And then, of course, you're transitioning through periods, prenatal, pregnancy, postnatal, you know, and sort of perimenopause and onwards. And one of the things which I just sort of see it as pure basic science, and I love basic science and I love pushing the boundaries of basic science, because, for instance, you know, in a time in, you know, 2023, here I am with my Oura Ring, got my Apple Watch, tell you what, I'm tracking everything. I've got a glucose monitor on, you name it, I can track it. Can't track my hormones. So really what we need to be able to do is to do exactly what the kind of the Genis app is doing and be able to try and back calculate at the moment what our hormones are telling us. Because, you know, all of our grandmothers or mothers or parents would have sort of said, you know, listen to your body. And we just haven't been listening to our bodies, and you know, science can't tell us a secret sauce. So we can only, when we're doing hormonal checks, we can take a point in time, just a point in time. It's like having a photo, right? We can all have a bad photo. So what we need to be able to go is do something which is much more continuous, and then of course you learn from it, and so I just sort of see this as the beauty of basic science. We are developing, we're growing, but we need apps like this to be able to help science and real world data at scale.
And how and Jessica or Michelle, whichever one you want to take it, and then we've got to go to a short commercial break, how important is that how important is it to get a real diagnosis or diagnostic value for the level of particular hormones in order to be able to derive a useful outcome from that, versus slightly softer measures of observation and tracking and things like that. Like to your point, Michelle, continuous glucose monitoring is like here and here to stay, thank goodness, particularly if you've got type 1 diabetes or type 2, but amazing technology. Is that how, but presumably like that, I mean, trying to get that involved in continuous hormone monitoring is probably still quite a way away. And presumably there's some stuff that can be done before we get to that point. But I don't understand. I don't quite, it'd be great to understand how important that actual blood-based diagnostic of the actual levels of actual particular hormones is important in the grand scheme of things in this area, in your opinion.
We probably both want to answer. I'll take the first bit and then I'll pass over to the power of the Genethep to be able to tell you more. But I don't think we really need it, right? So there's a difference between sort of wellness and fitness and proactive and preventative health versus something which is clinical, right? Yep. So I think that, you know, we all kind of know in our own sort of monthly cycles, right, that we all sort of feel different as our hormones change. And what we're doing is we're sort of personalizing that feedback, our own kind of feedback, finally listening to our own bodies to then be able to use it for something which is around fitness or, as you sort of say, around nutrition. And that's a first, right? And it's quite amazing that actually that is a first. But as we've, you know, I'm sort of, Jessica can then can explain more, but it actually can make a real impact to the way that not just sort of, not just elite athletes, but also I think just for keeping personalized wellness and fitness. And I've certainly felt that through using the app.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think it's that ability to be able to, it's the power of having that constant monitoring and really becoming in tune with your body. I think when it comes to hormones and testing, it's very, you know, you have to be very specific with testing on day 3 and making sure it's very pinpointed. And for everyday women as well, going around, you know, their everyday life, that can often be quite challenging and quite difficult. You've got to find a way to be able to, you know, monitor these changes. And we all know, you know, month by month that actually, gosh, I get these headaches at this time, but I don't monitor it. I'm not sure if they start here or the end there, but it's recognizing those patterns and becoming in tune with it that you can actually start to make the real differences to the way you move, the way you fuel your body and the other things that you do from a lifestyle perspective.
I think that's really interesting. And because when we started PocDoc, we very much focused on the cardiovascular pathway. So trying to help, and the biggest gating factor in that pathway is lipid testing. So 5-marker or 6-marker lipid test has to be quantitative. Otherwise you can't play, in effect. Has to be the full 5 or 6 markers. Otherwise has no clinical value. You can't move through the cardiovascular pathway without that test, but there's obviously a huge, huge, huge barrier to testing if you have to go to a GP surgery regularly. So that's how we started, and we've moved to other things. The idea being you can just do it with a developed lateral flow test, which creates a quantitative signal, use a phone, take a photo of it, convert it into a predicted concentration. So I've sort of heavily summarized my R&D department there, but hopefully they'll forgive me. And I think that what we talked about before the show, female hormones has been something that we've talked about. But I take your point, which is there's a sort of, you know, just by offering the ability of women to track and monitor what they're doing and what they're feeling on a monthly basis is a good start. But what do you guys think about, just in general, about sort of making hormone testing itself easier? Is that something you see as something, a problem that women face, or is it actually not? It's like it sort of isn't really where the ball game is, if that makes any sense.
I think from the conversations that we've had with various physiologists and doctors, the saliva testing element of it is a great area, but it's still not fully where it needs to be. It's not, you know, robust enough, and it needs more time and investment in that area. But I think if there's a really accessible way whereby women can, I mean, for elite athletes, it's almost slightly easier because they have this whole system around them. And once it's in place, it's easy to track from that perspective. But if you're talking about an everyday woman who has 2 kids and, you know, going into perimenopause, for example, and all the other things happening, you've got to work out how feasible is it for that woman to test. And how often would she have to test to have a real, you know, gauge of what's happening to a hormone? So it has to be really accessible. Otherwise, I think a lot of women would find it hard to keep up with that regimented like regime of keeping on top of those fluctuations.
Makes sense. We have to jump into a commercial break now for a couple of minutes, but we'll be right back on this week's Health Tech Hour with Dame Jessica Ennis-Hill and Dr. Michelle Tempest talking about female hormone health and Jenis. So we'll be back in 2 minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guest today, Dr. Michelle Tempest from Kansasic and Dame Jessica Ennis-Hill from Genis and other sporting endeavours. So let's get back into it. So what I'd like to now start with is just take us on a journey if you can, Jessica, which was like, it's all well and good you ended up on a panel talking about female health and that, like, understood, but that's still quite a long way away from, like, starting company, building company, getting investors, launching company. So how did you like move from like, this area I'm really interested in, I think it's a real problem, like into focusing on like actually what you're going to do? And let's just start there. And then we can transition across into more explanation about how Genis works, because I've been on the website. I think it would be great to explain to everyone exactly how it works. I think it's super interesting.
Yeah, so originally, like I said, I retired from athletics and started on this journey of trying to understand, firstly, around what support women need during that pregnancy postnatal period. I was super lucky to have like a great physio and great kind of doctors and people around me at that time. But actually, the first iteration of Genis was a pregnancy and postnatal offer, so helping women to understand, you know, how to move their bodies during pregnancy, what are the key exercises and how to recover from birth. And that kind of started the app in 2019. Then we kind of obviously we hit a pandemic, which was a big...
I heard about it.
So we kind of like formed the bulk of the team during the pandemic. So it was all remote. And obviously at that time, everything was very much, you know, online fitness, you know, how can we survive during this time? So we kind of pivoted a little bit to producing more workout videos to help, you know, people keep fit and more women to keep active during that time. And then as we came out of the pandemic, we really wanted to go back to our original cause about helping women understand their bodies better. It's all about body literacy for me, you know, trying to help women be more in tune with their bodies from a fitness perspective. And that led to the creation of cycle mapping. And as I spoke about it earlier, cycle mapping is moving in line with your hormones, so really understanding those four phases of your menstrual cycle, being able to track, understand patterns, increasing body literacy. And then through the app, we provide women with bespoke ways to move, to exercise, to fuel their bodies in line with those four phases.
And how does a woman actually start with the app and engage with the app? How does it actually work? Like, what do you get when you sign up or when you start using it?
Yeah, so you get into the app and you can, you know, put, you know, your age, all your personal details in there, whether you have a cycle. If you're on the Mirena Coil, for example, that's another element that we're kind of working on at the minute. So if you have a natural or a regular cycle, you input those dates, so your period date, start and finish. You can edit moods, symptoms that you experience during the month continuously. And what the algorithm does is it works out where you are in those four phases. And we basically feed back to you, you know, how to move, what exercises. So we provide workouts within the app. And we also allow women to integrate their wearables to bring in their kind of Peloton workouts or whatever it might be as well. So it's really that big kind of education piece around what are my hormones looking like? What is my monthly cycle like? And how do I keep learning through the algorithm, you know, for what I should do during those phases?
And is the algorithm what you put together with the physiologist that you mentioned earlier, the research physiologist?
Yeah. So Dr. Emma Ross, she worked at the English Institute of Sport for many years. So across a lot of the Olympic sports, and she's done some amazing research herself and a real like pioneer in this area. And she's been working with us from the absolute start very closely on how, yeah, how we create the platform, really, you know, how do we feed this back to women in a really digestible way? And also how do we, yeah, really distinctively understand those four phases and how, you know, how, what are those physiological effects on a woman from an individual perspective as well?
And what has the general feedback been so far from users in general? And I guess there might be some case studies and highlights that are out there. But yeah, I'd be super interested to hear that.
Yeah, it's been incredible. I'd definitely say I've chosen an area which is definitely challenging. You know, I often say to the team, you know, we should have created some, you know, running trainers or something that surely would have been and women's health is, you know, it's a hugely complex area. But the hardest thing to a certain extent is that there's this whole like education piece on top of everything. So you know, we're going out to speak to women, and generally majority of the women on the platform are hormonally aware. They're aware of their cycle. They've perhaps had, you know, severe cramps or headaches or hormonal kind of symptoms during their cycle, and they're searching for something to help them. And then the rest of the women that kind of use the platform, we're having to firstly educate them on, you know, basics of four phases. What does this mean? When do they occur? Before we then layer on, well, this is what we can help you with. So it's definitely been a really challenging area. But we carried out a small research study last year on 25 participants. And what we did is we did saliva testing with them over a period of time. And it was incredible to see how the way they move their body, when how they normally trained, to then using cycle mapping and training in line with their period. Difference that they reported physically, like that consistency to training, that motivation, but also just that ability to just feel really in tune with their body and feel that they're working with themselves more than anything than against themselves. So yeah, we had some incredible feedback around that, and that's an area that we as a company want to kind of delve into a bit more, that whole research side of it, because I think it's so powerful. And then obviously, as Michelle says, it contributes to that gender data gap that is still very much there.
Yeah. Sorry, Michelle, I don't know if you want to jump in there.
I think I'll go back to your point, actually, where you were sort of describing PocDoc and you were sort of saying, you know, there's all these things which are measurable. So I suppose that I would just take a step back. And if you're kind of looking at the whole pathway, and you can sort of call it female health, but I mean, it's kind of just healthcare in general, right? Considering there's like 4 billion women in the world. So when you're taking the full look, I don't think it's just kind of, you know, it's not just about a test, right? So what we're actually looking at is we've got to paint the picture of the of your own body, and that's really how personalized future healthcare will be. That's the foundation of it all. So at the moment, I think what we're looking at are things like, you know, we split things into services and then software as a service, which is called SaaS. The future, I think we're talking here, and I'm so glad, by the way, you didn't choose trainers, because that would be quite boring, wouldn't it? What you're doing...
or you could have done like Wigo, just get the clothing line out there. Do you know what I mean?
Boring. But instead, rather than just like, you're actually like taking healthcare to the next level and actually doing what I would classify as PAS, which is prevention as a service. And that is so key to kind of the future of healthcare, because healthcare is super expensive these days. And as you were saying, Jessica, it's around how do you educate people to look after themselves? So sure, we're getting all this sort of stuff about software as a service, but I think prevention as a service is the future, and it's definitely what's being built here.
And what, sorry to jump in, what would the women that are using your platform who maybe have been suffering from hormone related symptoms, negative symptoms, I guess sometimes that might be impacting their health or their activity, what kind of services did they previously have access to before using Genesis? Like, what's the baseline here that we're talking about? Like, what happened? What do they have? I don't know. I'm just stumbling over my words. I'll let you answer.
No, I think that's the problem. Like, what is the baseline product? What is offered to women?
Yeah.
So many women that kind of, because we're in this phase where we're helping women to understand that baseline. What are my hormones doing? If I can monitor it over a period of time and really understand my body in a really great way, then when I'm heading into these transitional phases of, you know, perimenopause, for example, and menopause, I know what's happening to my body. I know what's about to come. Whereas so many women at the moment, they're just not aware when they're entering these phases. And then there's that worry of, well, you know, is it cancer? You know, I'm going to seek help from my doctor because I'm not sure what's happening to my body. And I think, like Michelle says, if you have this preventative mindset of actually, do I understand myself? Am I tracking myself? Have I got some data to show how this has changed over a decent period of time? Then when you enter those phases of change, then you're very much prepared and aware of where you are in your life. And I think that's so powerful.
So is it a bit like, are we sort of like at the base of the pyramid here, so to speak? So first step is trying to get people to understand what on earth is currently happening with their bodies and track and monitor it over a period of time. So we have a data set that's pretty good that you then can kind of build on with additional services to help make further improvements. But the kind of, we just need to get the data in place because that's a big enough challenge as it is versus the baseline of like nothing.
Yeah,
I think you're right. I think, though, just to answer your original question of kind of what was out there before, I just answer it simply, there was nothing out there before, right? I mean, right. There was nothing. So all you would do is basically you could ask your friends, right? You could ask your friends, right. And it was usually quite a small circle of kind of family and friends that you can answer. And look, let's be honest, that's not just in the healthcare sector. This is the beauty of the internet and the beauty of technology is around the fact that now you can collect, you know, you can kind of go and actually find out what other women have sort of found helpful, and then you can actually put it all into one place. Mm-hmm. So we've gone from nothing into kind of having a bit of a global, as you wanted to sort of say, the base of the pyramid. But you need the base of the pyramid to be able to then, you know, to improve and to understand and then go from there.
The base is pretty, I'm not an engineer, but I believe the base is pretty important, generally speaking. So that makes total sense to me. So what are these sort of, where can this sort of evolve into? What other services? So the reason I ask is we've had a few guests on the show that have been in and around the menopause space. So one was the founder of something called Ember Labs, which you may not have heard of because it's a US business spun out of MIT. And they've created their whole area was around thermoregulation and changing the perceptions of body temperature. So it's very hard to change your actual body temperature, but it's very easy to change your perception of body temperature because there's thermoreceptors on your wrists. So they built something that would sit on your wrist and transmit at a certain frequency that could effectively lower your perception of your body temperature above about 5 degrees inside of 3 minutes. So real dramatic to target hot flushes. But weirdly, they also had started to use it. This is a side note, but for men undergoing prostate cancer treatment, because their estrogen levels, I believe, are elevated. So they also get hot flushes. So anyway, that's just one area, as well as there are lots of different. So how do you sort of see this evolving beyond? How do you go further down the pathway if that's what you want to do to try and move from okay, cool, I understand my data. What's next? How do I improve? How do I how does that pathway look?
Yeah, I think we see ourselves as very much that baseline. So, you know, hormones underpin all those life stages that I've already spoken about in your life. And I think we're at the stage where we're just working on MVP for perimenopause because we feel it's a natural transition from understanding and having that data set to then moving into that next phase of your life and being prepared and knowing that these symptoms are the ones that are, you know, not the symptoms you've been experiencing for a number of years, how they've changed, and have some power to take to GPs and speak confidently to them, because there's still so much confusion around what happens at that stage in your life and what medication you should go on and antidepressants and everything.
No, exactly. So we had I'm just trying to remember who it was. I think it might have been Lena Chan, a lady who founded Parler Health, sold it to Holland and Barrett, but she was speaking about, or maybe it was Mrudula Paul, the founder of Pepe. I can't remember anyway, or might be both, around the massive, the number of women in perimenopause misdiagnosed with antidepressants. I'd never heard about it before, but it's just struck me as a massive issue, like a complete misdiagnosis and then being given some actually quite serious medication.
And it's huge, and it's something that, you know, for me personally, it's something that shocks me and something that I've only discovered in the past few years. And as women my age that aren't quite perimenopause, you know, we need to be aware of this and need to be prepared and understand that, you know, this has actually happened at this stage, and to try and avoid it, you know, what do we need to do? What are the lifestyle interventions that we can change through understanding, you know, our hormones and symptoms beforehand, before we get to that stage of, you know, going to a GP and having to, you know, be prescribed medication like that when we don't
Playing like Russian roulette with antidepressants, which probably won't work because you're not actually depressed. Right.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. And maybe if I can do a sporting analogy, which to be honest is not my forte.
Come on, do the sport.
I
wrote down on my script, I was like, I'll get Michelle to talk about sports.
Sporting analogy would be in the fact that, look, if you're kind of like going to host the, I don't know, the Olympic Games, then what I think is great about Jenna's is that, you know, it can also, you're kind of doing track and field, right? You're basically out there collecting and being able to monitor that individual, and we're all going to learn from each other. What you don't need to do as a business sort of point of view is get distracted, you know, and like jump in the pool or something. You can stay with what you're doing and actually let the person that's actually, you know, going to clinically diagnose, I don't know, it could be polycystic ovarian syndrome, or it could be something else. Actually they might, you know, what you want to sort of have is some sort of a basic kind of place where somebody will find it easy to use to be able to kind of track their progress as well. So I don't think all of a sudden you need to go out and sort of think, oh, I'm going to build everything all the way up to, I don't know, kind of acute hospital care. What you want to do is be, as a business, you want to be collaborative and then kind of build the pathway and the chain. And what I think is shocking is the fact we haven't had this base of the pyramid before, and we other things.
I completely agree. Like, I don't understand how you can get onto, how you can be effective at delivering the other stuff without there being this like ground data set, so that because I don't want to get myself in a pickle here, but I would imagine that like a lot of the reason why you track, or people would track the changes month to month and the things that are associated with it, behavior, feelings, physical symptoms, is so that you then have the ability to then work out when stuff changes without having to effectively continuously monitor your hormone levels from a blood test or a saliva test or a urine test, right? Because that's not necessarily particularly feasible. But actually, if you have this, I don't know, am I kind of in the ballpark there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's again, it just being accessible, isn't it? And being able to, like you say, monitor and understand. And you'll draw so many patterns and conclusions from, you know, 3 months of monitoring right. and tracking, you know, your, like you say, negative symptoms, positive moods as well. It's not all, let's look at all the negatives.
Yes, yeah.
That's how we feel on our good days, and how that then translates into the way we move our body or what we eat. Because there's, you know, it's this holistic approach. It's not one thing that, you know, drives everything. It's all these interlaced different variables.
Do you feel like sometimes that, like, to that exact point, which I'd never really considered before, that there's a lot of, I guess, built-in negativity about tracking how bad things are versus how good things are?
Yeah, and I think we fell into the trap a little bit, because at the beginning when we first launched, we listed all the negative symptoms that women log, and then we had a few of our women and customers coming back saying, but I really like to log some of my positive moods as well. And we were like, that's so true. It doesn't all have to be about the negative side. Let's monitor when we feel good and when we feel like we can push ourselves a little bit harder, and the impact that that has on everything else. So I think that's a really valuable point.
Yeah, no. No, well, look, we're about to, I've got to stop for the final commercial break, and then we'll come back again for the last wrap up of the show. So we'll be back in 2 minutes with Dame Jessica Ennis-Hill and Dr. Michelle Tempest.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome to the final part of this week's Health Tech Hour with my guest, Dr. Michelle Tempest and Dame Jessica Ennis-Hill. One thing I do want to know is, What do you think is harder, starting a health tech business in the hormone space or, you know, training for 50, 10, 12 years to win an Olympic gold medal?
That is a very good question. And I, now I'm a retired athlete, I look back at those years and I was like, gosh, it wasn't that hard. You know, you look back with rose-tinted glasses, quite easy. But actually in the midst of it, it was definitely hard. So I don't know, I feel this is a really challenging area that I've kind of tapped into, but an area that I'm really enjoying. And I think as an athlete, I've really relished that kind of moving out of my comfort zone. So although it's very much still physiology, you know, understanding female bodies from like a physical perspective, the whole tech side and the hormone side is something that's new to me. And I've really enjoyed kind of furthering my knowledge and speaking to experts and great people in this field to firstly understand why it's so underserved and not being able to contribute in some way. So I'd say they were both challenging, but I would say winning that Olympic gold medal in London was very, very difficult for it all to come together.
Yeah. But like, is there an element where, well, I don't know, like, because when you're an athlete, particularly in an individual sport, and I'm sort of extrapolating here because, you know, I wasn't an Olympic athlete, but presumably a lot of it was you doing stuff that you were doing, right? It was you. It wasn't you weren't doing, and it wasn't a sport like a rugby game where there's all kind of moving bits around, there's different people and you can kind of react to what other people are doing necessarily. Like, how do you feel like in a company where you have different people doing different things and things might be going wrong and they might be completely out of your control, did your athletic background help you with that, or is that something new that you sort of had to confront and you were like, oh, that's something I wasn't quite familiar with?
Yeah, I think you're right. I was definitely an individual athlete. So, you know, the successes, they were on me. The failures, they were on me. And I quite enjoyed that element of control. But then at the same time, behind the scenes, there was a really big team that worked with me. Right. So
that's fair.
I had psychology and, you know, a biomechanist and a physiologist and all those people.
Right.
And they're strong personalities who are really passionate about their fields, and being able to understand how you get a team to work together for one person to succeed is kind of a massive part of creating a successful athlete anyway. So right. I feel that some of those kind of team aspects and the psychology behind that and what I learned as an athlete is something that I've been able to bring into this new world. So I had my my old sports psychologist come and do a session with the Janice team
right at the beginning,
just to understand all our personalities and how we drive each other and how, you know, where our weaknesses lie and, you know, where are our sweet points as well and how to get the best out of each other. And I think that was a massive, massive help with the team and creating the team right from the beginning.
That is super cool. What a great opportunity. Were they slightly like intimidated, or were they like okay with it?
I think they were all intrigued. They were all really intrigued. But it's such a valuable exercise to do, because you come away with this whole profile of you and when you're at your best and how to work with individuals that are very different personality traits. But, you know, if you come together and you use this reference of murmurations, you know, when all the birds kind of swoop together and how, you know, you all work really well, you can create something incredible as a team. And I definitely experienced that within sport. And I think that's something that I really want to create with our team at Genis as well.
Well, what a great opportunity for them to be involved in something like that. Just to go back to something that you said before the break around it being an underserved area, just before we finish the show, I want to kind of dig into that slightly, because I had it on my pad, but it's a good time to talk about it now. Why do you think it's been underserved? What are your theories as to why it's been underserved? Lack of technology, lack of funding, lack of willingness? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think personally, I think the complexity, you know, it comes down to that. I think women's physiology is complex. Like, there's no getting around that. It's so hard to pinpoint those right times to test, for example. To every woman's so different. Some women sail through their menstrual cycle, have no symptoms. Others have debilitating symptoms where they have to take time off work. We all experience these life stages very differently, and we're very complex to study. So I think it's just been an area that's been so challenging. And has just been missed out because of the time, the energy, the resources and the funding it takes to really delve into understanding female health is just so complex. And I think that's my belief anyway. I'm not sure what Michelle thinks.
Yeah, what do you think, Michelle, from the kind of investor, advisor, consultant kind of perspective?
Completely agree that the issue is that this has just been it's been swept under the carpet, right? And it's no real different from sort of saying that mental health for many years was something people didn't want to talk about. I mean, often, you know, the word period wouldn't even be said on a show like this, right? So it hasn't been spoken about.
Yeah.
And now is the time, but I would sort of say, like, as an investor and as someone that works in consulting, that Jessica does bring something else, because I do remember you on stage also sort of saying that you like to win. And I have to say that I am so happy that there is a woman that likes to win, because we're going to need a winner in this world of women's health.
Yeah. And do you find, Michelle, how am I going to ask this? What do you think is the current sort of state of play, so to speak, of really strong success, well, really strong, possibly likely to be or already successful female founders in this space? Like, how do you read the field of play, so to speak?
Well, I think other women have to step up to the plate. And I like to kind of embody what I believe in. So I completely believe that women have to come along at this sort of stage and actually evidence that you can win in this world. Mm. And then I think others will follow. And I suppose just to sort of flag that, latest PitchBook data would sort of say, in terms of investment, that in 2020, 8% of tech investment was in anything to do with femtech. And in 2022, it was at least double digits, right? So we're up at 13%. So are we there yet? No, but we're trending in the right direction. I'm not too worried, because I think that women's health is, you know, now it has kind of come out from underneath the carpet, for want of a better word. It is something that we all need, we all want. And if we can get platforms such as Jenna's out there, we will learn so much from it that it will be good for society. And if you do something good for the world, then hopefully the world will reward that.
Yeah, I mean, I totally buy, like, there's no way you're going to get to an efficient way to through the pathway without having that really solid, like, block of data. You can have a crack at it, right? But you'll probably end up somewhere like it is now with kind of PCOS diagnosis. It's like 8 appointments to get the diagnosis, or
at least.
What I mean? Like, I'm not saying it's exactly the same, but sort of conceptually, like, it'll get a lot more efficient if you can look back over a really good solid set of self-entered or monitored data that shows these patterns and trends, I would suspect.
Yeah, because I think you're going there with all that information ready, aren't you? And you're not
right.
In the years that are coming, we need to take more control of our healthcare as individuals. And I think kind of gone are the days where we just had to, you know, rock up and see a GP and say, oh, I'm not feeling too great, I've had a headache. You need to have so much more power and control over the information that you have and how, you know, health professionals access it. And I think with technology, we're able to do that now. And the whole, you know, citizen science piece behind what we can do with apps now and mainly female apps, you know, drawing all that data to really understand on a much larger scale what happens to women at different stages of their lives and, you know, through all these kind of hormonal changes is just, so empowering for, like, the next generation. I've got a young daughter and she's only 5, but I really hope that she's, you know, moving into her teenage years, the conversation around periods and her cycle and everything like that is just, like, common, you know. She's so comfortable. And my son as well, I hope he can talk about it really openly, and that, you know, they have all this data and it's just completely normal to track and to understand and to make these lifestyle interventions and take power of your own healthcare. So fingers crossed.
On that note, and going back to, you mentioned this earlier around GPs, you just mentioned it again. Have you had any initial feedback from them about whether this type of data presented in the right way to them? Obviously, they'd have to see it in the right sort of format, not someone like waving the app under their face, probably in like a 7-minute, you know, appointment. But is this the type of thing that would help them? Have you had any interesting feedback from them? I'm just sort of curious.
We've not had feedback yet. I think we're at the stage where we're trying to keep evolving the app so that we can present the data in a really digestible way that, you know, more women can take it to their GPs. But I think if we're seeing now, you know, less and less time, less and less appointments, a lot of appointments on the phone and kind of online stuff at the minute, which makes it harder. I think being able to have that, control and that data to be able to present to GPs, you know, if you're heading into perimenopause, can only be like an amazing, powerful thing to have.
Yeah, because like if you, again, I'm making this up completely, so, you know, bear that in mind. But like if you, let's say there was a pathway, which I don't know what the pathways are around this type of thing in the NHS, but if you could effectively upload a month's worth or 2 months worth of or 3 months worth of data that was neatly summarized up into the patient record that they then could review, right, and use that as the basis of it, as opposed to a 7 minute, well, this is how I felt yesterday, this is kind of how I feel today, but last month it was a bit like this. Like if you could actually have that data in there, that would be kind of cool. You know, like in the US where they launched the Apple Watch ECG, and it lets you say in the US anyway, you can send it to your cardiologist, that kind of thing.
I mean, how incredible would that be? I'll let you speak, Michelle, but that would be incredible.
I think it's incredible. I also think it's needed because, I mean, you're talking about, you know, the pathways into care at the moment. I always describe it as a bit like Brownian motion. You know, you get bounced from one person to another person to another person. Yeah. And each time you're having to repeat the same sort of story. And to be honest, you know, we all forget as well. You know, you go along and you sort of think, oh, gosh, when was my period? And they, you know, what did happen 3 months
Jessica,
ago?
And Jessica thinks it was really easy to win the gold medal all of a sudden. It's like,
what's wrong with that?
Whatever, yeah, drop up on the day. Have a bit of a stretch, throw some stuff around.
It's exactly the same. Yeah, longitudinal data.
Yeah, exactly. Good. Well, look, on that note, it was lovely to have you both on. Thank you so much. Quickly before we go, Jessica, where do people go to find Genis? Where do they go? If they want to find it?
Genis is available in all app stores. So yeah, sign up, have a little taste and see what you think. But yeah, hopefully you'll enjoy it. It's a great platform that we're very proud of.
Perfect. Dr. Michelle Tempest, Dame Jessica Ennis-Hill, thank you very much for coming on the show. And thank you to everyone for listening. We'll be back again next week. Keep an eye out for the show on Spotify, YouTube, etc. if you want to listen again. Thank you.
Thank you.